Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Six Figure Success Club, where we are passionate about helping you get to six figures in your business. Today, we are going to be joined by Stacey Can, who is an award-winning franchise strategist. And she specializes in helping businesses add revenue streams through franchising. So let's get into it. Stacey, could you kick us off by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Hey, thanks for having me. I am Stacey Can. I am a certified franchise strategist, and I help business owners to scale their business and hit six figures and beyond through franchising.
I love that. So franchising is not something that I've ever really been involved in, but I feel like it's getting more common, or I'm just hearing more about it. So I've been really looking forward to today's conversation and learning how any business owner can franchise.
Pretty much. There's a couple that can't, but it's very rare to come across a business that really can't franchise, because even if your original model can't be franchised, there's usually a way of kind of taking part of the business and franchising that too.
I like that. And is there what's the difference between franchising and licensing?
Sure, great question. So licensing, the business owner has slightly less control, because there's still a contract in place, but it's about kind of taking your brand identity and what you do and giving it to somebody who can then go and operate pretty much however they like. So licensing generally slots into another business. Franchising, the business owner has a lot more control. The franchise agreement is more stringent. But most importantly, it comes with an operations manual where the franchisee basically agrees to follow the operations manual. And financially, with the franchise, there is a monthly management fee that the franchisee will pay. Whereas with the license model, generally someone will buy the license and there might be like a percentage that they pay at the end of each year as a royalty, but it's not quite the same recurring revenue as you get with franchising.
Okay, so I imagine there's a market for both, and it depends on what you as the business owner want out of the what end result you're looking for as to whether you go for licensing or franchising.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the time it comes down to control and kind of how you want the structure to be. It's getting more common, actually, particularly in online franchising, for the business owner to do both. So you would franchise into a certain territory like the UK and then license the rest of the world as an example. So it's very mix and match. Ooh. Very confusing.
I like that. And as a business owner, where does the business need to be before you think about franchising?
Really good and a bit of a loaded question there, really. So traditionally, you would say that you need to make sure that your business is proven, so that you've got proven income, because when you're taking a franchisee on board, you're going to have to prove to them that they're going to make a return on their investment. So proven, making money, and replicable. So generally, when you start a business, you can't then put it into an ops manual, box it up and then give it to somebody else, because you're still figuring it out for yourself. That said, you can start a business with the intention of franchising. So literally from day one, you can know that you're going to franchise, and X amount of time down the line, you just hit the button and go for it.
I like that. So if anyone that's listening now is whatever stage you're at in your business, you could start thinking about franchising now, even if you're not ready to franchise yet. You can start thinking about it and maybe put some things in place.
Absolutely. So two really good examples of that was, are we allowed to name them? I don't know if that's all right. But yeah, so there's a phonics franchise that was started with the intention of franchising. So the business was started, but they knew right from day one they were going to franchise it. And they now have a huge number of franchisees, and Lisa Johnson's latest business as well, literally was started as a franchise. So you can start day one. Equally, I work with franchisors or business owners that have been going for like 10 years and go, actually, I want to exit soon. I need to turn this into a franchise so that I'm not delivering, into my 60s.
I like that. It's a really interesting business model, I think, because it allows you to grow and scale your business, but it's not you that's having to do all of the work. You're not having to deliver all of the programs or the support or whatever it is. You're supporting the franchisers, I get my word incorrectly, yes. And then they go out and do the work in that region.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's great, because it means that you've loved this business, you've nurtured it, you've grown it, and then you're using other people's money to come and invest as franchisees to then take that business in a box to their region. Usually franchising is regional, like territory based, it doesn't have to be, but they take that business in a box from you and they go and love it and nurture it as much as you have as the business creator. And eventually, once you've built your business to a certain level, to an extent you sit back and you just watch that brand grow, which is so amazing. But yeah, your job then changes to support the franchisees and make sure that they've got what they need. So yeah, it's a real like full circle business model.
And I think we're going to name drop Lisa a lot here because I really like what she's done with the business success
company. Yeah.
Because yeah, you're right. Like she's spent years developing a coaching practice and she's been wildly successful. And her like vision for her coaching business was to change the way that the coaching business is perceived by other people and to make sure that it's done authentically and with integrity. And now that that is successful, she's franchised it because she wants to make a bigger impact in the market with solid coaching practices and people doing it the right way. And I think that's a really cool business model. And I think I really like the way that she's done that and the fact that she can make even more impact now in the right way because she's franchised her business.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what she's done with it. I think it's really clever. And like we said, like right at the start, she's proven that, you know, what she's doing makes money. She's got proven, you know, like strategies in place. We know that it works. We trust in Lisa as a brand because she always delivers ROI for her clients. And then to basically pick up elements of that and create new assets to put it into a franchise is so clever. There's another another business-based coaching franchise which has been around for a very long time, but it's very much offline. And I think what we're really seeing, and Lisa's kind of one of the pioneers in this, as is another lady called Caroline Strawson, is we're starting to see businesses franchise online and move away from the traditional territory model. And they're wildly successful because suddenly you open that opportunity up to everyone in the world. And if you've grown an audience already, like with Lisa, when she launched her franchise, she already had an amazing audience behind her that, you know liked, trusted, raving fans. And she made $1 million in a month, which is insanely successful. You know, we don't all do that. But the reason that success happened was because she had the proven model that we said it's going to make money, the brand behind it, and the audience as well. So yeah, amazing.
A lot of us in the coaching world, we aspire to be like Lisa. Like she is the pinnacle of what most of us want to be in our business lives. So I think the cool thing about franchising is that by buying a franchise from Lisa or someone like Lisa that's doing kind of what you want to do, you get a piece of what they've built and you get to pull on their expertise and their business strategy, and you get to kind of take that and shape that and use that yourself, which I think is really amazing.
It really is. Actually, it's one of the reasons I bought in. So I'm a franchise strategist. I've also been a franchisee for 9 years in another franchise called Daisy First Aid, so much more traditional territory based. And I bought into the Business Success Club because the structure that she's got in place is incredible. The plug and play aspect into like a coach's, I'm not kind of advertising, but like from a coaching point of view, to be able to just drop in some of the stuff that's in there. But more than that, it's the support behind it. And I think as a franchisor, you franchise your business. So you start off as delivering and you get used to that. And then you franchise and you have all these people then kind of, I did a reel about how it's a bit like parenting. You kind of bring these people under your wing and you really look after them and nurture them. But it becomes about train the trainer. So you go from coaching your clients into actually coaching your franchisees. And that's why coaches actually make really good franchisors, because you've got that skill set of coaching and bringing somebody along with you. And like with the Business Success Company, a huge amount of the support is teaching and training how to make your business successful, as it should be in any franchise. And I think once a franchisor is able to really nail that bit of teaching and training somebody else to be successful with their business, you just fly, which is why from a coaching point of view it's a perfect model, because you've already got the skill set.
Absolutely. So I'd love to talk about one of the things I come back to in every conversation that I have on the podcast and the things that people are doing is, how can we do it earlier? So what are the things that we can be doing? If let's say we're running a business now, someone's at the start, they're still kind of growing, it's not stable yet. Are there things that we can be doing now to prepare us for if we do want to franchise later in life? And what sorts of things would those be?
Absolutely. And I love this question. So I speak to lots and lots of different business owners at lots of different stages. But actually, if you're early on in your business, you've got a really good opportunity to hit the ground running with franchise, whether you decide you're going to franchise in the next 12 months or the next 12 years. Two really important things to do if you are going to franchise. The first one is to make sure that you document everything. So us business coaches, we are not so good at documenting our own processes because it's kind of like, I'll do this today, I'll do that. But actually, if you can start to basically form your operations manual for how you run your business, that's going to really hit the ground running from a franchise perspective, because that's usually the biggest hurdle to get over at first, because you've suddenly got to document how you're going to run a business. And it's a big task. But you can do that way before you franchise. And if you've got that kind of as a live working document, as you add things in as you go, like, it's just perfect.
Actually, before you go on to the second one, I think that's something that most of us should be doing anyway. Like, even if you're not going to franchise, have your operations processes and things written down anyway, because then if you bring on a team, you've already got that. But one of the like sneaky things that it does is it means you're prepared for franchising as well. But yeah, if you're bringing on team members, you've got somewhere that they can go and look at all of the things that you've already created so that they know what they're doing. And also it gives you the benefit of, if you do ever want to franchise, you've got that set up already.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. Like, very often I see business owners delay in bringing in staff because they're like, well, I've got to figure out how I teach them what to do. Whereas actually, if you've really got that ops manual there, it's like, hand it over. Like, that's the strategy. That's what we're doing. So yeah, the ops manual part is like a really key easy win. The second thing is to build your audience correctly. So Lisa made a million in a month because she already had that audience ready to go. If she was starting out of a new business and didn't have the audience, there's no way she could have done that. Now, the goal isn't always to hit a million in a month, but you know, proven success time and time again is where we've got people to sell to, right? Like, that's the premise of business. So what a lot of franchisors do is they have had a local business and they franchise, so they've got a local audience. So the bit that they struggle with in terms of recruitment is then spreading nationally and creating a national brand. Whereas actually from day one, if you are working more kind of nationally, growing the brand all over and internationally as well, because let's face it, we shouldn't limit ourselves. We should never limit ourselves. So grow that audience as big and as wide as you can, rather than kind of being really, I think we get so caught in like audience growth with our niche and just getting our ideal client, and remembering that our ideal client is the, you know, the bullseye on the dartboard. And actually one day, if we're going to franchise, we need a wider audience so that we've got more people to sell to. So yeah, that one is quite key.
I like that. So yeah, the two things that you said there they're not completely outside the realms of what we should be doing, I think, in business anyway. I think like audience growth is the key thing that we all need, especially if we're based online. We constantly need new people coming in so that we can continue to sell to them. And having the ops manual created is just good business sense, because it means that you've got something there that tells you how your business works. And if you need to bring in other people, they know how it works as well. And then the benefit of doing those things is that when you are ready to franchise, you've already got them and it's already something that you're doing, and it's not a whole new level of work that you have to undertake to be able to get ready to franchise. It's already done for you.
Right. If you've got those two key things in place already, then really the only two other things that you need to kind of tag on are the legal side of it, so like franchise agreement and trademarking. Again, we should really be trademarking as business owners anyway, but I'm surprised at how many people who don't. So the legal aspects of it. And then it's about kind of looking at your recruitment process and your messaging and what you're going to put in that box, which becomes your franchise. So it's, I think when people understand that, they're like, oh, actually franchising doesn't seem so scary. Like, it's not.
Yeah, when you break it down into those little steps, it really doesn't sound quite so bad. No. So with the legal side of it, are there specific solicitors that focus on franchising? Is that somewhere that we should be looking at, or is it any solicitor? What's your...
Always go with a franchise specific solicitor. So I talk to a lot of potential clients. Oh, I've got a solicitor. I'm like, if they're not a franchising expert, then really we need to find you a franchising expert. And I've got ones that I work with. Ideally, they would also be BFA approved if you're based in the UK. BFA is the British Franchise Association. And by working with a British Franchise Association approved franchise solicitor, it means that if one day you want to join the BFA as kind of a regulatory kind of, you know, body, it means that it's much easier because you've kind of already done the work. It also means that, again, in the nicest possible way, no one's going to have you over. There's a lot of negative stories where people have gone to franchise, had a consultant who's maybe not quite been the right person for them, or had a solicitor who's not been quite the right person. So from a legal perspective, going down the British Franchise Association, which just gives you that extra layer of protection that they're proper. So yeah, having one of those is really key.
Okay, perfect. And then let's talk a little bit about the franchising pack and the benefits of that to both the business owner and also the franchisor. Is that the right? What sort of things are in the pack that you would be giving to your franchisor?
So as a franchisor, the thing that you're going to need to create is basically put your business in a box. So what you want to do is be able to be a franchisor who has a box of, you know, services or products or whatever it is, and you hand them to the franchisee, who is the person who buys in, and they have full operations manual like we've already talked about, and this kind of business in a box. And what generally goes in there are things like, you know, if you're service based, how do you deliver your service, what services are there. So let's say that you were a coaching service, for example, what kind of coaching packages are you going to put in that box, what are you going to give your franchisees to go and sell basically, and what support are you going to give them, what marketing material, you know, like website, that kind of thing. So what's going to go in that box is really important to develop as the franchisor. And then in terms of the benefits of that, from a franchisor perspective, you will get income from selling the box, if you like. I really oversimplify it, but like selling the box, which is your franchise package, and you'll get a cash injection for that because it will be X amount of £1,000. So you'll get that up front from your franchisee, and that's your franchisee making the investment to be able to operate in your business as the franchisor. Then financially, what you also get then is monthly recurring revenue, because you will charge a monthly management fee. And that monthly management fee gives the franchisee the right to continue to operate, basically. And that can either be a fixed fee or a percentage of their earnings or a combination of both, which is what I'd recommend, so that you've got that guaranteed revenue coming in. And then from a franchisee perspective, as a franchisor, you can also charge marketing levies and things like that. So additional percentages based on their turnover. So that's how you make your money as well. From a franchisee perspective, you benefit from basically having a massive shortcut. So people always say to me, well, why would somebody buy a franchise rather than start it by themselves? Now, I was perfectly capable and have started businesses by myself, but I've also bought franchises because they give you a huge shortcut in business. So if you've like developed your business, built up a brand, et cetera, got all of your operations, kind of procedures in place, your products, you know, your offerings, et cetera, you know how hard that is to do that. You know how many years you've spent refining that, tweaking that, et cetera. So for somebody who wants to start a new business, they probably don't have the same confidence that you do or the same skills that you do. Or like me, sometimes they just wanted the shortcut. Mm. So buying a franchise, it's estimated, will give a business owner approximately a 3-year shortcut in business, which is huge. Wow. It's huge. And the other reason that franchising's so kind of highly regarded is because it's about a 91% success rate. Yeah.
I mean, I expected it to be high, but not 91% high. That's mad.
91%. So if you kind of put that into the context that most business startups fail within the first year, or certainly within the first 3 years, buy a 3-year shortcut in and have a 91% success rate slapped on top of that, I mean, it's just, it becomes a no-brainer, franchising, in that respect. And banks love franchising because of that 91% success rate. So you're more likely to be able to go and get finance for it and things like that. But from a franchisee perspective, you then benefit from having that business in a box. And yes, you pay a monthly fee for it, but your earning potential is uncapped. You can go and earn whatever you want. And the great thing about franchise is that there's a whole variety. You know, you've got, everyone thinks of the McDonald's and the KFC, like that's what we think of franchising in this country. But actually, you'd be surprised to find out that cleaning firms, like window cleaning is that kind of thing, gyms, personal trainers, coaches, shoe shops, opticians, like you name it, there's probably a franchise in it. My favorite one is crime scene cleaning. Yeah.
Random.
But this proves my point, like literally anything can franchise. Accountancy firms, like you name it, they can franchise. And there's always going to be someone out there who wants to start a business that you've started. So the fact that they can buy in and invest in you is great. And it also means from a business perspective point of view that, you know, if you've hit a ceiling point and you've been trading, you know, as we all start off doing, like one-to-one clients, and you're trading, you know, money, time for money, you're going to hit a ceiling because there's only so much time in the day. So you then have a choice whether you either go and take on investment to grow your business, or you go down the franchising route where people do invest the money in you, but you keep 100% of the business. So I'm a huge fan of the franchising model.
I can tell whether you sound very passionate when you're talking about it. And I do think it's a really interesting way of growing your business, because you could either continue to work in the business that you've worked in and stretch yourself thinner, or bring in more of a team that you're then managing, or you give other people the opportunity to run their own business that you have some control over still. So you still get to grow and expand, but you don't have to do quite so much of the legwork because you're now coaching those franchisees and they're going out and running the business for you instead.
Absolutely. You get to do the nice stuff, like turn up at the award ceremonies and be the sponsor, and, you know, all the nice branding stuff. You get to be that person and jump on the podcast and promote the brand and support the franchisee. So yeah, it's a really nice place to be. And I think a lot of us, like, you know, like we've all got a different story, but I left corporate because I didn't want to be in corporate anymore. So the thought of them building a business empire where I have to take on loads of staff and premises and all the rest of it, I'm basically jumping back into corporate by accident. Yeah. And so many of us don't want to do that, that the thought of taking on staff then stops our business growth. So, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, oh, yuck. So franchising just gives you another route without having to then manage the staff, because your staff are not your employees are not your staff. So you don't need to treat them like employees. You need to support them and help them to grow and encourage them and teach them, but you're not responsible for them in the same way. It's really nice.
Yeah, let's touch on that a little bit more. Like, what's the expectations of the franchisor when it comes to the success of the business? Like, how much of it is down to the franchisee? And because I think one of the things that I know that's come up in conversations I've had around franchising is like, what if it's not successful? Like, is that my fault as the franchisor, or is that down to the franchisee? Like, where does the line stop?
Great question. So legally, like responsibly, it's 100% down to the franchisee, because it's their business, they're self-employed, they are the business owner. So as a franchisee, you have to conform to the brand guidelines and not put the brand in disrepute, but it's 100% your job to go and, you know, spread the word in your territory, or, you know, wherever you're operating, go and grow that and bring the money in, yours. But as a franchisor, I mean, pretty much every franchisor I've ever worked with, and I've worked with a lot, they feel so personally responsible for those franchisees, because it's people who have invested in them. And when you buy a franchise as a franchisee, you really do invest in the franchisor. But the support levels will massively vary. Some franchisors will operate on, it's yours, get on with it. There's not a huge amount of support, all the way along to like nurturing, growing, you know, checking regularly. There should be a really good onboarding program regardless of where you sit, so that you make sure that you've given them the right skills. So it's a real, like, how long is a piece of string, to be honest, in terms of what's delivered. But really and truly, it's about the franchisee performing. Now, some franchises will operate on a percentage income rate. So let's say I'm the franchisee and the franchisor is going to take 10% of what I earn each month. Like, that's my management fees. So if that's the model, the franchisor has a vested interest to make sure that the franchisee is performing, pushing the business, et cetera, because otherwise that 10% is going to be niche. Other franchisors have a different approach and say, well, I'm just going to take a flat amount each month. So I'm going to take, let's say, £200 a month. And I don't care what you turn over, like, that's your business. That gives you a better protection to make sure that you can cover all the costs associated with, you know, like the website and the workspace and all the rest of it, all of the costs that kind of come in, and make sure that you're still making a profit. Mm-hmm. Those franchisors don't have to be as invested in what the franchisees are doing, because what the franchisee isn't doing doesn't really impact financially. But if you've got a franchisee who is struggling, not doing very well, it breeds discontent. And so from a management perspective, if you've got a franchisee who's struggling and you're not helping them, they're going to go and talk to all your other franchisees. And very soon you lose a lot of franchisees that way, or you have a really toxic network. And having dealt with that a few times, it's a horrible place to be. So, yeah, so it kind of comes down to how the franchisor feels about it. But certainly the ones that I work with are always encouraged to give more support. Mm-hmm. They won't always take the support as a franchisee, but have it offered just in case.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so legally it's down to the franchisee to be successful, because they own the business, it's their business. But generally, if you're a reasonable franchisor, you want them to be successful, because it makes you more money, but also it's good for your brand. It means more people are going to want to come and be a franchisee with you. And yeah, if it's not going well, then bad news spreads fast and other people will find out very quickly that you're not offering the support that they maybe expected or that they need.
Yeah, exactly that. It does come down to ethics in that respect, but also what you want for your brand. You know, every franchisor has franchised because they want to have more impact. Mm. And you can't have more impact if you don't have happy, successful franchisees.
Mm-hmm. And is there a limit to the number of franchisees that you can have, or does it depend on how you've split up territory or whatever it is that you, whichever way you've decided to do that?
Yeah, there's no limit. If you're going down the territory route, you basically map out the region that you're in. So let's say UK, you'd map out all of the UK into different like sections, and then you'd sell off each section, it's hard to say, as a territory for your franchisee. So if you max out on all of those territories, then of course you hit your ceiling, but you don't have to stay in the UK. You can, you know, become a global franchise. So in that respect, unless you've literally mapped the world and franchising stuff. And in the UK, it's a non-regulated industry, so anyone can start a franchise. You don't have to comply to any kind of regulations and things like that, although I do recommend that, you know, you look at things like the British Franchise Association, because although it's non-regulated, there are certainly different ways that you can operate that are, you know, better and more ethical. However, in places like the US, it's regulated, so there are more kind of hoops to jump through. So it's making sure that, let's say, like you've maxed out on the UK, or like you've kind of hit a good comfortable number, you've got that kind of financial freedom coming in from a revenue perspective, and you're right, let's go to America. Most people actually go the other way and they go to Dubai and places like that. But let's go to America. Then it's about making sure that you've, you know, covered all of their regulation requirements and things like that. Their contracts are very different and their legals are very different. So in theory, you know, there's no franchisor that I'm aware of, including McDonald's, that has maxed out yet. It's always a new territory to go to. Equally, like I said earlier, there's a real growing trend towards online franchising. So this makes a lot of sense from a coaching perspective, because, you know, you can coach anywhere in the world. You know, like you might jump on a call this afternoon and do a coaching session with someone in Australia. Yeah. So from a coaching and kind of business perspective there, that trend towards online means that rather than being exclusive territory based and potentially maxing out, actually you go non-exclusive territory, which means that you're franchisees can operate anywhere in the world. There's no issue with that, in which case you're unlimited.
Mm. And do you think that obviously when it's territory based, I think it lessens the competition between franchisees because you only sell in your territory. So how does that differ when you're online and you can sell anywhere? Does that become more competitive, do you think, between franchisees?
It's a great question. I've got a franchise of both. I've got a territory based and I've got an online based as a franchisee with my franchisee hat on. Territories mean that you have no competition. So from a network perspective, as franchisee network goes, everyone's going to be collaborative and open and sharing, because whatever I do in my territory is not going to impact you in your territory. And actually, if I do something amazing in my territory, you should copy me, because you'll get that in your territory and it doesn't impact me. So there's a nice collaborative sharing kind of culture in the exclusive territories, because you can't step on anyone's toes. That said, being part of an online franchise, if you've got a big enough offering where people can pick and choose, and this is what Lisa's done really well in her franchise, where you can pick and choose what the franchisees are selling, like they pick their own packages. And everyone within that has their own different niche. So like for me, I'm a franchise niche. There's not many people out there. Well, there's no one in the business success company at the moment who specializes in franchising. So my take on the same courses are going to be very different, and they're going to be geared towards a very different audience. That said, you know, one of the other franchisees might be stepping on my kind of perceived area of expertise. But I think genuinely, if you're open about the fact that they're buying a non-exclusive territory and this is how it is, again, with the right kind of franchisor, you can foster the right culture of it's collaboration, not competition. Mm-hmm. And you can make sure that those that sign up to be a franchisee really truly understand that, because within the online franchise that I'm part of, there's a lovely sharing openness. You know, everyone's helping each other, even though potentially we're competing, but how many people are there in the world?
Yeah. I think it kind of comes back to like just running a business normally. Let's Yeah. Remove the franchise bit from it. If you're running a business, you are going to come across other people who are doing the exact same thing, but in a different way to you. So there's lots of other business and sales strategists, which is what I do, but they don't do it in the same way that I do. They're a different person to me. Their values are different. And I think that's the same. What I'm getting from you is that's the same in the online franchise space, is that you might have franchisees that are doing similar things, but again, it comes down to who the client wants to work with. Is it me with my yellow, or is it you with your black and white stripes? Like, who is it based on what we're doing? Who would they much rather be working with, kind of thing? And then that's up to the franchisee to help you to get them to stand out so that those clients come to them and not to somebody else that's doing a similar thing.
Absolutely. I think this is where we see this age of like where personal brand is so important from a marketing perspective. Like, this is actually where online franchising kind of comes into its own as any business ownership, because people are going to work with whoever resonates with them, regardless of whether they're a franchisee or not a franchisee. I think the franchise route just gives you, well, for me, it just gave me kind of a better plug and play, like less work to do shortcut on what I'm offering, but I'm still offering it in the same way and I'm still marketing to the same people, and they'll choose me or they won't.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives you that the extra level of support and the resources that you would have to have kind of created yourself if you weren't doing it via a friend. If you just decided you were going to start a coaching business, there'd have been a lot more work in it for you than taking on a franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, again, like with the franchise that I bought into, we've got like a charter. So people kind of look at the franchise and go, okay, that's a stamp of quality, rather than this is a box that you're sitting in. So yeah, it's good.
I like that. And like, this has just been an advert for Lisa, really. But what Lisa's done, I'm just going to send this episode to her and be like, Lisa, all we've done for an hour is talk about you. It's just a really cool example, especially as you and I are both in the coaching space. It's the most relevant example of franchising. Where she's built such a strong Lisa Johnson strategist brand, and we all love the work that she does, and we've all learned from her. The fact that she's then able to box that up and let other people profit from the work that she's done is what I find coolest about franchising. I think that's as the franchisor, you get to earn more money by expanding your business, but as the franchisee, you get to tap into the work that someone else has already done. Like, they know it works, they've put their expertise into it, and you get just a little piece of that pie, and then you get to take it and build the rest of your pie yourself.
Yeah, absolutely that. Exactly that. And, you know, Lisa and Karen always say, like, success isn't success unless you bring people with you. And this is such a good way to do it. It really is. And to have the franchisor's support and kind of push in a really good way to help you to grow. It's just, you know, on those days when you sit there and it's Monday and you're like, oh, what am I going to do today? Like, actually, when you know that you've got that behind you, like, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm going to pull my finger out today and do this. Like,
yeah, it's just like, there's more of a feeling that they're invested in your success, because the more successful you are, the more successful they're going to be, the more successful their brand's going to be.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's in the early days of like franchising, when you've just got kind of like 0 to 5 franchisees, you can be so invested in those early franchisees because you get to give them so much more attention. And then as your network grows and you hit, you know, like 20, 50, 100, you're going to have less of a personal connection with them, but you're still as invested in like franchisee 100 as you are franchisee 1. And that's just the loveliest thing about franchising, I think, from a support perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything that you think that we've not talked about when it comes to franchising? If we've got someone that's listening that's now, after this amazing conversation, is now like, actually, franchising might be for me. Is there anything else that they need to be thinking about or that they should be doing to kind of prepare themselves?
I think, as we said, document what you're doing, get that ops manual kind of, you know, framework together, and be thinking about your audience. Those are like the absolute key, like, do that now, regardless of whether you're going to franchise or not. I think if you're sat there thinking, oh, franchising might be for me actually, then do your research. It would be really good as well. And there are two general routes to franchising. There are either you do it yourself or you do it with a consultant or a strategist like me. So I didn't call myself a consultant because I'm a strategist. I'm a strategy bod. But by having somebody to work with, it means that you're going to skip the mistakes. Mm-hmm. So you can do it by yourself. If you're going to do it by yourself, really, really invest in the research. beyond Google. Don't just Google, because you can Google the practices of everything, but beyond Google, make sure that you've got a proper recommended franchise solicitor, ideally through the British Franchise Association. But also go and make friends with franchisors and talk about the reality, because, you know, yes, it's an amazing place, but it can also be quite a lonely place in the early days. It can be really kind of daunting to be like, okay, franchise, how do I get franchisees? And the biggest issue that franchisors face is, how do I get franchisees? That comes down to marketing. And as a marketing geek, I'm like, this is easy. But as a franchisor sat there, you know, at your dining room table in the early days, kind of going, I have all these coaching clients, this is great. Now I've got to get franchisees. It's a whole different ball game. So obviously speak to people, you know, get the research done. I'm literally about to launch, I don't know when the episode's going to go out, but literally about to launch another way that you can franchise, which is a hybrid. Doesn't exist at the moment, but it will literally by the end of September, which is amazing. It exists behind the scenes, but it's not live. And it's basically a program, a membership program, where you can come in and do it yourself, but with guided structure. So it's a lot cheaper than using, you know, a strategist or consultant, but you get my guidance throughout regardless, in like a one-to-many kind of program. But it's a membership where you can drop in and out. So yes, there's a whole new route about to launch, but the world isn't aware of it yet, which is awesome. Lexi, it's all yours.
Exclusive on this podcast, everybody.
Yeah, literally. But yeah, so if you're sitting there kind of thinking this might be for me, get some research done. And, you know, I'm always happy to chat to people, whether they kind of want to go on and work with me or not. I'm always happy to jump on a call and just advise, like, yeah, I can see this for you, or actually maybe not. Or sometimes it's, well, you probably just need to tweak something, and that's it. Yeah.
Research. Yeah, and I'm a big advocate for asking for help. Like, go and find someone like yourself that's a franchise expert and a strategist and work with you, because like you say, you'll skip so many mistakes, and it'll be a bit like taking on a franchise as a franchisee. Like, you get to skip the first 3 years of business. It's a similar thing working with a strategist like yourself. Like, you can franchise your business in a much easier, faster way without making quite so many mistakes as if you've done it by yourself.
That's right. I mean, the key mistakes I see for people who are franchised by themselves or not used the right kind of person is that they go through all of the processes. Yeah, my franchisor, great, but I've got no franchisees and I don't know how to do it. And then they get a couple of people who are like, oh, I want to be a franchisee. And they go, great, yep, you're in. And they take on the wrong person. And that can be really detrimental, because it can cost a lot of time and energy if you've got the wrong franchisee in, because it's just square peg, round hole. Nothing you do is going to make it fit. And then you've got this awful kind of conversation, probably about 2 to 3 years in, where you go, you're not right. Or someone's like, I'm not right. And then how do you manage that situation and bring it to a amicable close without damaging your brand? But it takes so much energy and it costs so much money. So that's the key mistake that you avoid when you work with somebody, and not setting your management fees correctly, which... Yeah. From a revenue point of view, you can just absolutely kill your franchise if you don't have the right revenue kind of coming in. And I'm surprised at how many people make that mistake. I'm like, well, where's your minimum revenue? They're like, oh, I don't have one. Like, oh! That's the benefit of franchising. So yeah, so there are some really key mistakes that you can avoid by, yeah, having the right person in your corner.
And as with everything, I think anything that I talk about in business, it's the planning and the research that's the most important. Make sure that you do those two things first, whether you're working with a strategist or not. Make sure that's done before you move ahead, so that, you know, like with the management fees, you know you've got everything in place before you go ahead and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone can franchise, it doesn't mean everyone should. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite key. That's something I definitely learned along the way. But yeah, research.
I like that. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely chatting to you. This has been really interesting.
I've loved it. Absolutely loved it. It's been really good to chat. You can tell how passionate I am, I'm sure. Just love it.
For sure. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. My three key takeaways from today would be to get your business processes documented now, even if you're not thinking about franchising. It's something that we should have in our businesses anyway, so that when we are looking at taking on staff or contractors, we've got those processes mapped out that we can give to them, so that onboarding is easier and we don't have to spend so much time training them. We've got a pack ready that we can give those people. It also comes in handy when, if you're looking to sell the business at any point, having those processes mapped out is really important. The second takeaway would be to have a look at whether adding franchising to your business is something that would benefit you. Do you want to expand and grow, but want to do it without having to take on a full team? And would franchising suit you better by allowing other business owners to come in and spread your brand for you? And my third key takeaway would be to, if you are looking at franchising and going down the franchising route, the researching and the planning is the key aspect of doing that. Before you go ahead and do anything, make sure that you've got that nailed down. And if that means working with a franchise strategist like Stacey, then absolutely invest in doing that, because it will save you so much time and money in the long run. But thank you for listening. I will see you next time.